The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
All right, it is in the middle of an international week, and I'm delighted to say that if we look ahead to Luxembourg and a little bit of a look back on what happened at the Serbia game as well, we're joined on the line live from Canada, Kevin Kilbane. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Adrian. How are you doing?
Bags under the eyes, Kev.
Jesus Christ, you're dropping it on me straight away, aren't you? No, I feel good. Not.
You sleeping?
No, not really. But it's all good. I'm just... it's more, I'm catching up on loads of stuff overnight, which is good. I'm actually catching up on you guys on OTB AM at like 3 a.m. over here. So I can kind of just listen to a little bit the first half an hour of your show. So more so Owen, I have to say. But anyways.
Well, he's not going to put you to sleep. That's the difficulty you have there.
Well, he puts the baby to sleep. That's more important.
Like, I mean, here at your disposal whenever you need, Kev. Any help I can give.
All I'm hearing is that you're saving the good stuff for OK Magazine, Kev. You're not going to give us any of the juice. So.
Much appreciated. Well, it's been a tough year, hasn't it? You know, honestly, yeah. You've got to earn the corn, haven't you?
Mary, that's a good segue into what we're here to talk about. So obviously, we'll look ahead a little bit to the Luxembourg game coming up. The lads at Vinnie Perth on the show yesterday morning, he was making a really good and interesting point about the bigger picture of Irish football. And like, even if we were to get things right, for example, and get the young players in, and it just got me thinking and wondering to ask you about, you know, if all those things were to come right and we were to get our players playing regularly in England or beyond, like, because the expectations of this are maybe the biggest thing, right, as a nation, and
yeah,
our expectations of where this Irish team should be at. Even if those things come right, like, and, you know, we might not still be, we probably aren't still a nation that are going to qualify for, you know, we're not going to be group toppers. We might qualify for 1 in 3, 1 in 4 tournaments.
Yeah.
So I suppose the reality of that, sitting alongside the optimism, I suppose, that a lot of us are feeling looking at the Irish team at the minute, they can sort of sit side by side and both be true.
Yeah, that's right. I think what we've always had as well, and you're saying they're 1 in 3, 1 in 4, probably across our history, wouldn't even be that, would it? It's probably 1 in 7 or 8. So the reality is that we've never been a nation that's qualified for tournaments regularly. We've had a good spell through, you know, late '80s, early '90s, and you know, even into 2000s, where we were on the verge of qualifying for it. But that has been pretty much the extent of it, really, hasn't it? That's where we're at. And I know that 12 and 16 at the Euros where we did qualify. But the one thing you look at off the back, when we're looking, you look at optimism at the start of a group, though. You look at this and you're seeing what could happen. The reality is it could be over in two or three games. You could know. I mean, there's, you know, you're reading the reports of after the Serbia game and everything's on such a downer. Yeah, good performance in spells, very good things to take from the game. But the reality is, the way that the group or the international football works towards a tournament is, you could be dead after 2 or 3 games. You could be gone. Or at least you've got an awful lot to do. And I remember, you know, looking back at various campaigns that I was part of, then you come off the back of World Cups or off the back of good qualifying tournaments and you think, right, next one, we're going to go for it. And before you know it, it's over before you've even begun, because you're kind of chasing your tail for the rest of the group. And I think there is a lot of optimism, just maybe going on what you're saying, though. There is a lot of optimism because there was some good things that were shown. But if you're not getting the results, where are we going to go from it? You only need to read what's said on social media. It is still split at times. There's people that's in Stephen Kenny's camp. There's people that aren't, because people are still looking at the results that the team's been getting. But the reality is there was so much to take from the game. In comparison to what we've seen on the pitch and in performance-wise, than what we've seen over the last, I'd say, probably 6 or 7, maybe 8 years. I would probably easily say that. It was a good performance away from home, as good as we've produced in spells for a number of years. But what do you have in the bank if you don't get a result to show from it? And that's where we are. It's harsh, but that's where we are.
All of which means that, like, when you look at it in the bigger sense in relation to that, like, are you in the camp that kind of feels that we should, like, because the result hasn't come and we haven't had a win in 9, got a first couple of goals last night, and that's why people are feeling optimistic, we're creating some chances. Are you in the camp then that feels we need to give him time and those results will come? Like, he's not going to be writing off the campaign internally, obviously. But
no.
Do we need to just give him a break for this campaign or the next campaign? Or what's your sense of that? Because there's a bigger picture at play, obviously.
Yeah, I think the bigger picture at play is that if like there are doubters, of course there's doubters. If they're heard on the mass, and we decide then to think, well, look, we'll part ways with Stephen Kenny, we'll go elsewhere. Where do we go to? I think there was more, anyone that's watched the team, if you put your hand on your heart, anyone who's watched the team over the last 8 years, we've come in after games and we've had results and performance hasn't been great. God, it's been a tough watch that, but we've got a result. Whereas, let's be honest, I think gradually through Stephen Kenny's reign, we've seen spells where, I'm not saying it's all been great, don't get me wrong, it's not all been great. The final third of the pitches, you know, we haven't been great at all at times, but there have been things that you're looking at and thinking, there's optimism here. So I personally think, and it's not just, you know, just being biased towards anyone, or, you know, I've not got a relationship with Stephen Kenny whatsoever, but it's, where do you go to? What are we going to do if we decided halfway through this campaign that Stephen Kenny's not the man, that we go somewhere else? Honestly, I don't see there's any benefit in it. There's absolutely no benefit in that whatsoever, because I think that the team has moved forward incredibly. And again, it's not me just being totally optimistic here. Anyone that's watched the team, if, as I said before, put your hand on your heart, you would know full well that there was a lot more positives about the performance in Serbia the other night than there has been in years. And that's the way that I would look at it. So I don't think there's any way that you could even contemplate getting rid of Stephen Kenny at the moment. Absolutely no way, because I think there's so much more to come from the team. It still is a young team. If you look at the side, you know, you can imagine the amount of people sat on that bench of the night: Robbie Brady, James McLean, Jeff Hendrick. Their noses would have been put out of joint. Even, you know, Shane Duffy and people like that, noses put out of joint, because they'd feel, look, you know, I've done enough over the course of my career to warrant a place within that starting 11. But the reality is that we've sat here and we said, look, Jeff Hendrick hasn't been great. Robbie Brady hasn't been great since the Euros in 2016. So Stephen Kenny's taken big decisions within that camp, and he's upset one or two people. Absolutely, he's upset one or two of the players there. And he's decided, look, we're going to go with a lot of these younger players and we're going to see where it takes us. And the only way that you can go with those younger players is go for a 2 or 3 year period at least. And I think we need to give them at least two campaigns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's that sat alongside the greater thing about systems and youth players and all that sort of stuff that we keep an eye on over the next while. Looking at the game, who is standing out for you? Like, if this is the group we're going to press ahead with, as you said, some of those maybe more established names didn't feature as much as they might have wanted to have had the other night. When you're looking at that group, who are the players that are standing out for you that think he'll be thinking about building a team around?
Someone we looked at was Malumbi. I thought Malumbi in spells did really well the other night as well. I think in midfield, I think we had the ball well. Alan Brown was terrific, wasn't he? He played so well. I know he got his goal, but his overall contribution, if you look at the build up to that first goal, outside of the foot pass out wide, it was Liam Brady-esque, wasn't it? You know, but you're kind of overlooking the talent that one or two of these players bring to the side as well. You know, we've still got a lot more to get out of Aaron Connolly. I'd feel that. So He's going to be a fixture for the next campaign at the very least, I'd feel. I think for the first hour of the game, I mean, it was a mistake I felt from maybe Kieran Clark just for that first goal, just by trying to maybe step in, trying to anticipate, that allowed the flick to come on from Tadic. But that's a side issue. As a defensive unit, I think they look well. I think they look good from back to front. So I think those names that I maybe mentioned there, Malumbi, I look forward to watching again, see how he can progress. Alan Brown, especially Aaron Connolly. And I thought Coleman was terrific as well. And I know that I've been banging the drum for him, but I thought he played a leader's role. And I think playing in an unfamiliar role for him in that back three, I thought he played really well.
The easy thing has been to obviously talk about Connolly and maybe Callum Robinson and put the blame firmly at their door for why Ireland hadn't scored a lot of goals before Wednesday night. Is there a sense that the service they're getting perhaps isn't on a silver platter? They aren't getting many gilded opportunities to actually convert opportunities at the moment?
Well, do you know what it is, Adrian? When you watch us at times, we're taking the ball so deep. So we in possession of the ball, and we get into the final third or the middle third of the pitch. I think they've got to do so much when they're in possession of the ball. Predominantly, if you're looking at Connolly's role when he's playing, or even Robinson's role, the players that like to get on it, the players that like to drop deep, get on the ball, try and turn and run at opposition. And if that's the case, there's kind of no support. Who else is going to be the ones that's in support to feed them when they get into the penalty area? But looking at the team of the night as well, you could see, I know Brown's goal but maybe showed that, but there was great build-up play. Brown then became a third striker. We had there was another player, I think, that obviously before Robinson set him up, there was four players in the penalty area anyway. So in doing that, the onus is not necessarily on Conley or on Robinson to score the goals. They might have to provide like they're doing, and it might be players that's arriving from deep. When the way that Stephen Kenny sets up, because we are going to be playing, I say from the back. You don't want to use terms of, you know, play good football, but essentially we're playing a lot more build-up football. So the goals are not necessarily going to come from firing into wide areas, put a cross into the penalty area, and you've got a big striker scoring. They might be getting to the bylines, build up to bylines, and they're going to be pullbacks. They're going to be balls that's going to be midfielders arriving from the edge of the penalty area. And I think we may score more goals from maybe the penalty spot to the edge of the penalty area in that sort of area, rather than just firing crosses into the box, because we've not necessarily always got two strikers in the penalty area. Because even though we kind of played 3-5-2 the other night, what either Conley or Robinson were dropping deeper to try to get onto the ball. So in fairness, it did become a 3-4-1-1 system. That's kind of how it was working at times, because there's always going to be a bit of a feed off up front. So that's maybe how I would look at it. Maybe I won't be getting stressed out about the lack of goals, because I think there was enough created, and there has been enough created anyway in recent games. And I think they will start to flow as they did last night or the other night. And I think defensively, we probably haven't been as sure as we've always been defensively. And maybe that's something that's going to come as well as the team progresses. And if we're going to use this system, which I don't see any reason why that this system shouldn't be in play for the rest of the campaign. If we're going to use this system, I think defensively they'll get better and better with each game anyway.
And Gary Breen was making the point that not even Robbie Keane in that team over the last few years would have been scoring very many goals.
He wouldn't have done. And that's it. Honestly, genuine agent. We talk about having a player like Robbie Keane. I can honestly, the way that the team has been playing at times, when we've sat deep as a 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1 under Martin O'Neill and Mick McCarthy, let's be honest, the chances haven't been created. So I know we've played games when Robbie was playing where it might be one chance and he scores, but there's no chances. We're not getting the ball into the penalty box too often enough. Whereas at least last night or the other night, we were getting balls into the penalty area on a regular basis.
Just, you mentioned defensively there, so just looking at that for a second then, Damien Delaney was very critical of the system on the TV after the match, and he was talking about it was a bad call by Stephen Kenny, that it takes time to get for the players to get established in those sort of systems. And they only had, it seemed like, listen to Alan Brown afterwards in the interview, like a day and a half or whatever to try and get to grips with it. What was your sense looking at it, given your own?
It's true. I mean,
perhaps would have come from that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you speak to someone like Kenny Cunningham and you look at the difference from the reaction from Damien Delaney. Kenny Cunningham would always be along the lines of, you know, you played at international level, you've played various systems through your career, you can adapt. It is a short spell, though. In fairness, what Damien said, it's a short spell to work on a system. Errors are always going to happen because of the lack of preparation time. That's always going to happen. But if we're going to get Matt Doherty and Coleman into the side, that's probably the way to do it. And the two of our best players, I feel as though that it's going to be difficult to overlook either one of those when you're going forward in a campaign, particularly, you know, Matt Doherty's obviously at Spurs, Seamus doing so well at Everton over the years. I think it's the ideal system. And last night there was an error. I mean, I said it before, there was errors within the goals, the build-up for all the goals, that when you look back on, I think as an individual, if the individual players look back on, they'll realise that they could be prevented. Stephen Kenny absolutely will know where the mistakes were made in the lead-up to the goals. But honestly, as I said before, let's be honest, for the first half an hour, that's as good an away performance for the first half an hour of that game. And yeah, and I know it's 90 minutes across a game and you've got to do it, but let's be honest, we started so well. I think we pressed well. I think we were able to get on the ball well. I think we had lots of spells on the ball throughout that match. We created chances. So I think overall there was errors in this, or there was flaws in the system because of the lack of preparation time. But I think that's the way to get the best out of that squad of players that we've got, or certainly as a team 1-11, with getting the likes of Coleman, Doherty, you know, Brown, who can be in a more advanced midfield. You've got Cullen, if it would be Cullen that's going to sit as a holding midfielder. And I think you get a chance to get the likes of Robinson and Conley and one or two others up front into the game more. I think it's the ideal system, yeah.
Technically, how incredible was that Mitrovic goal, the first one that he scored?
Yeah, I'd look at it, maybe there was errors, wasn't there? I mean, you know, everyone will look at the goalkeeper, Travers, it shouldn't have come out. And I think in the build-up to the goal as well, there was a couple of mistakes. I think again, it was probably Kieran Clarke getting sucked under the ball that allowed Mitrovic to get free, and you know, Dara O'Shea then chasing. But technically, it was brilliant. I was absolutely brilliant. On the move, full tilt as well when he's running like that as well, to get his head up and see that Travers had come, because Travers he'd come quite early actually. If you look at it, he'd come quite early, and he then got himself in a position where he was struggling. And under normal circumstances, he's probably maybe get his head up, and he's maybe seen that the keeper's retreated back towards his line, and he's probably thinking, I might not get it, I might not be able to do it. But to take the chance like he did, it was a world class finish. And you know, his goal scoring record at international level speaks for itself. It was maybe a surprise he was on the bench given his record, but he came on and maybe proved a point, Mitrovic, because he's a quality striker. He is, no matter what you think about him. You know, maybe playing for a club like Fulham over the years where they've been struggling at the wrong end of the table, he's gone away to the Championship and he's continuously scored goals when they've been dominating games. So if you're going to have a lot of possession, you get balls in the penalty area, Mitrovic is your man.
Yeah, even if Travers had, he was so far away from it, even if he was a few steps back towards his goal, it was so brilliantly struck that he would have been well.
I mean, I think, do you know what? If he hadn't have gone, if he hadn't have, because he anticipated, and he think he's going to, he thought initially he was going to come out and clear it because there was more pace on the ball, obviously realised that the ball maybe held up a little bit and he had to then retreat. But it's still, even that, he still wasn't in an awful position. He was a couple of yards out. Let's be fair, he was a couple of yards out. So the skill from Mitrovic to complete and execute what he did, it was superb. Yeah.
Can I ask you, Kev, just something slightly off the pitch that Seamus Coleman had spoken about in the lead into the game? I don't know if you saw this, but he did a press conference.
Yeah, I did.
Talking about the comments about the game. Was the first Stephen Kenny game where he got he was dropped for, and he was asked to do the press conference, and reports in some of the papers that were saying that he was deeply upset about this and hurt, you know, that as captain he was forced to go in front of the media, and he addressed it as eloquently as you would expect Seamus Coleman to do that, and essentially saying that it was totally untrue. And he was more than happy to go and fulfil his duties, having spoken it all out with Stephen Kenny in terms of Matt Doherty playing better club football at the time and seemed very accepting of it. But the bigger picture, when you step back from it, it's yet another example of somebody within the FAI, it seems, briefing against Stephen Kenny. Is there an onus on the FAI to step in and weed this out, Kev? What's your sense? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, there must be lots of conversations going on about this. You would think, like, that was the forward-facing response to Seamus Coleman. I can only imagine the conversations he's been having with Stephen Kenny about it, but, you know, they must be aware that there's seems to be somebody there, again, briefing against him.
You know what, Adrian, honest to God, I think, certainly through my international career and even afterwards, there was always something, little stories that were getting out. Half the time, there were nothing stories. And even this, even the Coleman one, it's a nothing story that's become something, hasn't it? It's, you know, Seamus even addressed it himself. It's kind of like saying, look, I'm captain. I've got the full thumb responsibility. That's it. So for me to read what I read about myself was ridiculous. It was ridiculous in the end. But that's always been the case. It's always been maybe the scourge of my time. And since then, that there's always some stories, again, most are actually nothing. They always seem just to get out and they become something then without them actually being maybe a something that's actually going to rock the boat. And I do think there's a responsibility. There's a responsibility certainly around Stephen Kenny's immediate team. What's going to happen now is that they probably won't trust certain people within the FAI. It'll be, you know, he's getting things out or she's getting things out. And it then creates a bad environment. You know yourself, as a great company man yourself, Adrian, you know how things work, you know. So I think, no, I mean...
But
no,
on, I think, get the dig out of the way and get on with your point, come on.
But it can manifest into something that it's not half the time. And I think all that's going to happen here, it'll bring the squad of players closer together. It'll bring maybe Stephen Kenny and his immediate staff closer together, because there's always been a lot of trust, and that's always been the case, the trust from, you know, the coaching staff and the players and things like that. Players are going to talk to maybe agents or talk to friends and things like this, as we've probably seen in a big way over the years with WhatsApp messages and things like that. But, you know, but that's always going to happen, isn't it? It's always going to happen. But it's more the fact is that type of thing, certainly with Seamus, anybody that knows full well, anybody that knows Seamus Coleman knows full well that that is not his character at all. That with the reaction that was reported, you know, I felt it was a wrong decision, but. And I'm sure he felt it himself. I'm sure he wanted to play that game. I'm sure he was like, look, I'm here, I'm fit, I'm the captain of the team, I should be starting the game. I'm sure he was disappointed, but it doesn't take away from the person that he is and the character that he is. That if you read it, you probably know that it's not him. He wouldn't be, you know, kicking up a fuss. He wouldn't be digging his heels in. He wouldn't be making waves behind the scene. He wouldn't be talking bad about the manager, because whoever he's played for, no matter whether the team win or lose and whatever's going against him, even when he's faced a lot of criticism, don't forget, Seamus, and, you know, the debate that we were having about him and Matt Doherty over the years starting in the team, rightly or wrongly, people would have gone with Doherty for various reasons. And I get the point that they're making, but he's still such a huge influence on that squad of players, the younger players when they're coming in for first time caps, because of what he's achieved in his career. So he's a huge leader and he's a huge influence. And I just think it's always happened, and Seamus knows himself that it's always going to happen. But the FAI, yes, absolutely do have a responsibility just to sort it out, sort these little shite stories that continuously have come out that have just gone to disrupt managers and disrupt the players over the years. Just get them sorted. And you know, if it's something where it's, you know, upsetting the whole group of players and it's upsetting everybody, yeah, I understand it. But the little ones like this, they're ridiculous. They are. They're nonsense as well.
Like, do you think that there's a possibility that the FAI actually look at what's happened maybe on Wednesday night, and maybe if things go well over the course of this campaign, that they will look to back Stephen Kenny further? That may be coming out, I'm not suggesting maybe a new contract anytime soon, but maybe that is the sort of thing they look at down the line, if they accept that it's not going to be about the result of qualifying for Qatar, but more so the process of how they play football, that would be a real statement of, we are on board with Stephen Kenny, we are right behind this guy, because maybe you can make that, and you can get the impression from the outside looking in that there are forces at play that perhaps aren't on board with Stephen Kenny.
Well, that's true. I mean, again, you know, if you're talking new contracts and things like this, you know, that results are going to warrant that down the line for him. Hopefully he can see the team through for a couple of campaigns. But you do feel after that story when it broke, and even, you know, Seamus is preparing for a game and he's having to come out and address it. And he addressed it brilliantly, as Adrian pointed out before as well. But he doesn't need to be doing that. He doesn't need to be coming out addressing these sort of stories before a game, which have gone back. Well, we're almost, how long ago was it that when it actually happened? We're going back a year, aren't we? Half the things that actually happened around it, Seamus has probably forgotten himself. He wouldn't even go thinking twice about it. As soon as he goes back to his club, it's gone. You're done and dusted. Yet we continue to bother about stories that happened a year ago, and then it becomes something 6-8 months down the line. What is the point in that? So for the FAI themselves, yeah, absolutely. I think that they should give Stephen the full backing, absolutely, because we're as I say maybe earlier on, where are the team going to go if we were decided then we're going to look elsewhere, we're going to get a different coach to come in, we're going to get somebody else to look after the side. I think it has to be really now. Let's try and weed out any sort of negativity that's around the team. Let's get rid of it now, because if we're not going to be together, we know that the team, we're going to be up against it every international game we're ever going to be playing against. Even looking at, you know, the rest of the team that's in our group, aside of Portugal and Serbia, we've got tough teams to play against coming up. Not obviously not Luxembourg, but we've got a tough game. We've got tough places to go and travel to yet. If we're not all in it together, and there's that sort of little feel that there's one or two that's pulling against the team and pulling against the manager, then it's not going to do anyone any good. It has to be sorted by the FAI at the elite level, yeah.
Yeah, it does feel as if the grouping, that playing group and management are definitely in the pulling in the same direction. Kev, can I ask you, and I hope I'm not that you've seen this news, but in relation to Alan McLaughlin in the last 24 hours, really tough news. He's come out with a statement saying that he has cancer and has been battling it for a little while, and it's spread now to his chest and his lungs and to his kidney. And he's had surgery this week. It's been successful. He's recuperating at home at the minute and will head into radiotherapy soon. And we really wish him well. He's a bit older than you are, Kev. He's about 10 years, I think, in the difference. But there was a bit of an overlap of him, right?
Yeah, absolutely was. And I've been in Alan's company in the last couple of years as well. We did a function down in Tullamore a few years ago now, maybe 3 or 4 years ago now. Alan and myself went down there. So, he has had illness in the last 10 years as well. And it's tragic news. It is awful news because Alan was one of the guys when I first got, and Alan, yeah, he's probably like myself, although his accent tells you otherwise. You know, what you hear is not always what you know about the man. Alan is a true Irishman through and through. He grew up in Manchester and was also a terrific footballer, but he was great to me. When I first came into the squad, you said there was a 10-year difference. We were probably in for the first, I think it probably my first, definitely my first World Cup campaign, and he could have even done the Euro campaign leading up to Euro 2000, my first two campaigns.
Yeah, I think he retired in 99, yeah.
Yeah, so he would have retired after the Turkey game, yeah, in 99. So he was terrific with me as a young player coming in. When you're looking at lads, because I looked up to Alan for that famous goal that he scored up in Belfast, you know, it's not, you know me. These were true heroes of mine when I was a kid. So Alan was in that bracket to me. So when I was in these guys' company, you're always a little bit in awe of them when you're speaking to them. But it's when you realise what a guy Alan actually was, and he is a terrific guy who's had actually a brilliant coaching career as well as the player that he's had. He's coached at Swindon, at Portsmouth. He's taken youth side through. He's produced quite a lot of players through youth schemes, through the youth at both those clubs and other clubs as well. So he's a talented guy, and we just hope that, yeah, you know, when you hear the news that we got, you do fear the worst, but let's just hope that he's on the road to recovery, and hopefully he is. But, you know, you do fear the worst, of course, but yeah.
Yeah, we wish him well. There's definitely positive signs from the statement in terms of the successful surgery, and hopefully the radiotherapy works out. It's a tough road ahead, and we really wish him all the luck in the world with it. Before we let you off, we better get you were sort of earlier on, somewhat surprisingly, sort of writing off the Luxembourg game as like it's a bit of a gimme.
That's never going to be the case, is it? History suggests Faroe Islands and San Marinos and people like places like that. Yeah. So let's not know. It's not a game. Don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not meaning that, but we will win the games. I'm absolutely convinced, utterly convinced that we'll beat Luxembourg home and away. I'd be looking at really. I think Stephen Kenny is it. What's he going to do? I personally want him to stick with that system. If that's a system that we're going to go with that he used against Serbia, stick with that system. Go with that. He's probably going to change personnel. There are probably one or two changes within that. Mm. But let's use that now as our template going forward. And, you know, I think there's a lot of support for Stephen Kenny that probably he doesn't feel at times. You know, I think he can feel, you know, when you guys, I'm, you know, watching you guys over the last few weeks, watching all the shows, on OTB. I still listen to Nathan, believe it or not. Yeah. You know what? The best thing about it, I will tell you something about Nathan now. I think he said the other night, I was listening to his commentary, actually. I got the first half of his commentary the other night. He's a great man for a stat. Great reader of a stat. He's just not a great reader of the game. And that's not something that I thought about. I was thinking it when I was driving. I was thinking, he's a great man for a stat. But, oh, come on.
That, by the way, obviously is the ultimate insult to a commentator. A lover of a stat.
No, a great reader of a stat. He's just not a great reader of the game. No, I don't know. I've lost my school of thought though now. But you know, I think we will beat Luxembourg. I'd just like to see the team continue with what started in that Serbia game. I'd like to go with the same formation, absolutely. And I think there's a good opportunity, I think, now with the chances created, because there was enough chances created, let's be honest, when we've been to places like Serbia in the past, we've not created nowhere near as many chances as we created in that game. I think we will score goals. Genuinely, hand on heart, I think we'll score goals. And hopefully we can finish off this these opening two World Cup games with a bit of optimism now that I know we've got the friendly and things like that, but let's be honest now, it's just fully focused on the World Cup campaign. Get the result. And I think there'll be goals, and that will just take us forward. And I'm convinced that is going to happen. Yeah. And that's not just me being overly optimistic. I just feel that is more than achievable in this game now. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll take all that positivity. You get yourself some sleep.
I'll try my best anyway. Cheers, Adrian. Cheers, Owen.
Come on.
Thanks, lads.
Come on. Thanks, Kev.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.